This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Well, normally I would say call Carol, but don't. She's not here today. We are. Mike Morin and co-host Chad Zingales. Food for Thought is brought to you by Express Jewelry Center on South Main Street in Concord, New Hampshire. And Puerto Vallarta Mexican Grill on 2nd Street, Manchester. PuertoVallartaGrill.com. It's authentic Mexican at incredible prices. So we have gone through the first hour, had some fun with our comedy cold cuts. We'll do it again next Friday. Now here's the challenge I have, Chad.
I'm ready.
Chad, by the way, is Director of Operations at Amherst Country Club and Ponema Green Family Golf Center, where he's been for a long time, and is good enough to come in at a very busy time of the year to join me. So here's my challenge for next week's Comedy Cold Cuts. We will be broadcasting live from the lawn of the State House. I've not done this, but I think the Pulse does this every year. It's a promotion they do with the Propane Dealers of New Hampshire, whatever their association name is, and I apologize for not knowing that. I will by next Friday, so relax, everybody. It's all good. So I'm trying to think, all right, so will there be enough comedy out there about grilling or barbecuing? There probably is.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that probably a lot of the punchlines end up being explosions, which since this is a propane safety day, I'm kind of walking the line with what am I going to do about this?
We should get cake in celebration of propane safety day.
No. Cooking cake on the grill.
Cooking cake.
Yeah.
I think we should make it a point, Mike, to maybe write some quality jokes about grilling for next week's show.
That don't involve explosions or maiming and dismembering and things?
Right, yeah, yes.
All right, well, can I put you in charge of that?
You know what? I'm going to start right away, actually. That's great. So that's next week's, is it on Friday?
It's on Friday from noon to 2, which I'm really looking forward to. I like doing on-the-spot broadcast. It's kind of like when I first started radio over 40 years ago. You would do a lot more of those kinds of things.
Yep.
And over the last several years, I haven't worked at a place that did a whole lot of that in terms of, you know, out in the open. You typically would be tied to a business establishment if you did a local broadcast, and your sole job was just to get people to come in, which isn't a lot of fun. However, this kind of thing, you're out in the open, the fresh air, you can really have fun with it. It's 2 hours. It's not something that you have to put a lot of thought into, but you want to give the right message. So,
I have a quick story. Do we have time for a quick
story? We do have.
So on the side, I do a little moonlighting when I can, and I actually own a grill cleaning business.
You do not.
I do. This is no joke either. You know, there's a lot of grills out there, and they all need to be cleaned. And certainly nobody wants to do it, so that's why
right.
I'm there. But
okay.
Last year, I just started this business, and last year I had two clients in the same day. I went to Bedford to my first client, and then I was coming back to Hollis, and I had it in my GPS, and I drove into the person's driveway. I parked my gear. It's a small trailer, and no one was home, which is pretty common that people aren't home. I just go make my way back to the deck,
right,
and you know start scrubbing and soaking, and it usually takes about an hour to an hour and a half.
Okay,
a really nice house, security system, surveillance system on the back deck, actually pointed right towards the grill.
Right, and with their cell phones, they're watching you work.
Right,
probably.
Yeah, they're making sure I'm there and okay, and so I got the grill nice and clean. I got back in my truck, put all my stuff away. It was about a two-hour thing, and I was on my way home. And I decided, you know, I'm going to call the guy and just let him know that I was there. And I called him up, and he answered. And I said, hey, I just want to let you know, I just got done cleaning your grill. You were out of propane, so I couldn't test it, but the grill is sparkling clean. And the guy says to me, he says, geez, you know, I've been sitting in my living room here for 2 hours, and I haven't seen you.
and
to find out, I was at his neighbor's.
Oh.
So... Yeah, it was – so these poor people have like 2 hours of footage of some idiot who's cleaning their grill, which I hope they saved because, you know, it was free of charge. But then I turned around and had to go back to this other guy's neighbor's house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it was quite something.
How did you get the address wrong?
I don't know. The GPS is always off by two.
Okay.
So, you know, when it says arrived, I have to keep going. That's what I've learned is I got to keep going. I'm not at the right number yet. So – it's a, you know, lesson learned for a new business owner. It was a little embarrassing, but hey, it's a good story at this point. It's quite something.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. You know, I just started it. And
is there a website or anything?
It is. It's called Just Like New BBQ. I'm the grill cleaner of New Hampshire is what I'd be.
Are there many people doing that?
There is not, actually.
Oh, my God. It's such a perfect business, especially for some of the nicer, you know, areas like you're talking Hollis and Bedford, where you would assume if people you know, have nice grills, they wouldn't mind paying a few bucks to have it cleaned.
It is. It's.
I love that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a really, when I saw the business idea, I said, geez, you know, this is something that people need and they don't want to do. And I've met a lot of awesome people. I was actually just out in, I went to Rye, New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
and cleaning a woman's grill, and she had a beautiful setting, and she was so happy. She came out, and she gave me 4 Red Sox tickets to her box seats. She had season tickets.
No way!
Yeah, she was like, you know, thank you so much, and I like to pay it forward, and, you know, here's 4 tickets. So I took my buddies to the game. I was just so thrilled.
That's very
cool. To meet nice people and be able to help them.
Right.
Yeah.
So just like New BBQ is how people could get in touch with you if they would like to have their grill cleaned.
Yeah, sure. I'm ready.
All right, so I mean, I clean mine maybe. Well, the last time I did a really, really good job is when I was selling my house in Hooksett, and the guy wanted the grill. I said, that's great because I don't really want to take it with me. I want to get a new one. It was a nice Weber. I mean, it was a run-of-the-mill $700 grill.
Yep.
And I tell you what, I could have used you then because I spent hours because you know how that nasty, that grease. And
it is a dirty, dirty job.
It is
a
dirty job. But I mean, it was looking good. I'm thinking, maybe I'll take it with me after all that. Look, it cleans up pretty well.
Yeah, I have a whole system where I actually I tow a trailer behind my truck. It has a dip tank that I can actually heat and soak the grill grates and the flavorizer bars.
Really?
So I soak them in there. And then while I'm doing that, I degrease the inside and scrape it all
Where
down.
Where do you get that kind of equipment? Is there somebody else doing it in other cities?
Yes,
must be right.
It actually started in Europe, believe it or not.
Right.
And now there's a gentleman over here in the States that's selling the system. And it's not a franchise. It's just all it is a trailer.
Right.
It's a concept. And
What's your business called?
Just like New BBQ.
See, that's that one's money in the bank for when you decide to franchise it, which probably has crossed your mind.
It has, yes.
Yeah, I'm seeing the wheels turn.
I can't be a radio personality my entire life. I have to give
mostly because it doesn't pay.
Right.
You've got children that will be going to college someday.
Hopefully. Although I am suppressing their talents just to make sure that it doesn't cost me too much money. <you know?
laughs> Yeah. All right. Well, that's very cool. Just like New BBQ, folks, if you want to check out. Do you charge by the size of the grill or the amount of endeavor?
Yeah, a little bit. It depends. And bigger grills are usually – most grills are about $100, $125
that's
bucks
all?
To clean. Yeah. And if it's a bigger grill and I have to travel, you know, 150 is usually the top of the
What
price
you need
chain.
To do is come to the State House next year and start handing out, or next week, and hand out your business cards.
Right. Talk about propane safety and clean grills.
That's right. I mean, and seriously, I mean, it will reduce the chances of grease fires, I would guess.
It's so true. Yeah, I've seen some really.
Oh.
My best friend's grill, he had never cleaned it in 10 years, and it's dangerous.
Oh,
you know?
My.
It's really dangerous.
Now, do you have you? I know it's fairly new, so you probably haven't done a ton, but. Have you cleaned a Big Green Egg? Are you aware of what those are?
I am aware, and I have not.
Yeah.
Not yet.
They don't get all gunked up. I have a Big Green Egg
yep.
that I absolutely adore. In fact, I used it last night for a steak, and it really is the love of my life now after my dog and Barbara, of course.
In that order.
My Big Green Egg. Oh, I didn't say what order.
Yeah, that's I have not encountered one of those. I've heard great things about them. So.
Yeah, they're tremendous. I don't see a huge demand for cleaning them the way that you have to with a propane grill.
Right.
I have mine actually plumbed into the house, so I never have to run out and buy
Smart.
Propane.
It's the way to do it.
All right, let's move on, shall we? I think everybody remembers Extreme Makeover Home Edition. It was a show that was on for many years on ABC. In fact, Ty Pennington and his construction crew came to Manchester. I want to say 5 years ago. I'm not exactly sure how long ago it was, but they redid a home right off of 293, not too far from the Wayfair Inn, which of course is no more, and Macy's. So, in fact, you can see it right off the highway. Although they put up some new sound baffles, so it's a little harder to see. But anyway, I'm sure many of you remember that. Anyway, Ty Pennington, has a new show that begins tonight on the Food Network at 10:30, and a couple days ago. Carol and I had a chance to chat with him, excuse me, and record our interview. His new show tonight with Amanda Freitag, who is one of the judges on Chopped, is called American Diner Revival. And what a perfect topic for our diner owner and co-host, Carol Lawrence. The show starts 10:30 tonight on the Food Network. And Ty Pennington, welcome.
Thanks for having me. How are you guys?
We're doing good, and I just want you to know that my partner, Carol Lawrence, owns 3 diners called the Red Arrow here in southern New Hampshire, so she, I think, has a special insight into this brand-new show of yours called American Diner Revival. It debuts Friday evening, 10:30. You'll be co-hosting with Chef Amanda Freitag, who we see on Chopped on the Food Network. So, Ty, in all those years that you traveled, and you traveled a lot for Extreme Makeover Home Edition, you would probably agree that in many places, a local diner is the soul of a community. True?
It really is, man. And it's funny. I guess I may have forgotten that a little bit until I, really dove into this project and realized just how much it is the soul of the community. And it's the heart. And like, where all the characters in a town, especially a town that has just a small main street, it's really where everyone gathers. And so what I love about this show is it has a lot of the qualities of Extreme Makeover Home Edition in the sense that an entire town and the community is coming together to help a family. But it's what I love about it is the family is the people that actually own the restaurant. And who benefits is actually the entire community because it's the place that it's sort of a community center, really. But I guess what's really kind of really awesome about a diner is unlike any other restaurants in the world, when you walk into a diner, you immediately feel like a comfort as if you're part of the family because you sit down at the counter, somebody comes and pours you a cup of coffee, and immediately you have a conversation with someone that it's a real connection. And for that moment, you feel like you're part of the family. And all the diners that I've worked for so far on all these episodes, you really get that feeling, and you realize that it really is the soul and the center of a town. And, that Norman Rockwell feeling, you just can't get in any other place.
Curious, Carol, would you say that what he is saying completely reflects your experience?
Completely. Ty, do you remember coming to the Red Arrow? Because I have a picture of you in my office, you and me.
You know what's so funny? I just finished another diner in Virginia, and there's this place that I called Walker's that I'd gone into when I was building a house there on Extreme. And so I said, and they have the picture of me behind the counter. And it wasn't until I'd walked in again, I realized, oh my God, I have been here. And so it's funny. I've been to a lot of diners because, a lot of times when we built a house for Extreme, I was in smaller towns and that's what I love is the character in those small towns and of course where they all go, but the diner. I remember a place called the Red Air. Okay. Yeah.
It was open 24/7. You actually had come a couple times, two or three times during your stay when you were here. But you are right. I mean, the diner to me, I get interviewed quite a bit because we have lots of politicians and celebrities and such come to the diner. And, I always tell them, the diner is the focal point in the community. I mean, it's the place where you can, you can sit and you can be, next to a doctor or a lawyer and on the other side, a garbage person, a homeless person,
right,
even for that matter. I mean, it's the focal point.
Yeah.
I wanted to tie
all walks of life, but everybody feels like they're part of that town family in the diner. Once you go outside the door, you're back on your own. But there,
exactly,
you really are all family, which is interesting.
Exactly.
Now, on your new show, do you mobilize the community workforce the way that you did on Extreme Makeover?
Well, it's sort of what I do, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm what you call a motivator. But you know what? Here's what's great is like, when people hear that someone has requested our help, usually it's people, insiders that work at the diner that really want to help out the people that own the place. And it's about keeping something open that is really in jeopardy of closing its doors because, let's face it, a lot of these smaller towns and these diners, they can't compete with the bigger chains out there in the suburbs and near the major highways. And so when the town hears about it, I am blown away at how many people want to come and help and how many skilled, people that just want to roll up their sleeves and really make it happen. And so, look, I've been blessed to be part of projects that, you really can feel that you're making a difference and sort of, making a positive impact in the community. And I have to say, what better place to do that in basically the community center, which is the diner. It's where everybody goes. So, and it's really awesome too because, I'm trying to do, cosmetic surgery on something that's been around a long, long time. And there are challenges that go with that. I mean, you own a diner. You can even imagine, like, what's that like trying to do something in like, a two-day project that you've only got so much time, not to mention you're dealing with materials that may not even exist anymore. And so there's that challenge, not to mention with Amanda coming in and putting new items on the menu. And she's phenomenal at what she does. And so, it's a blast because you're working with a lot of characters. I mean, like, I can't think of a better place to find, great characters than in a diner. So what better setting for us to do a project in?
Very. I think it's wonderful because, are you surprised at how many faltering diners that there really are? I mean, I see it all the time because wherever I travel, I always scout out the diners. And, you know, I try to talk with the owners, you know, when I'm there. And, you know, I myself, I have three of them now and their eyes are open 24/7. I still find it really surprising that they do still falter, but they do.
Well, I think it all boils down to, I think, the town and how,
right,
you know, how about how much people want to be there. And I think, and I think it also comes down to the personality of the people that run it, you know, because that's why people keep coming in the door.
Exactly.
And that's why, you know, it's so motivating for me to do, because when you do meet these people, you realize, one, how much it is. If it's a family-run business, then you sit down at that countertop, then you realize the reason people keep coming there is because they treat you like family. And I think that's the only way to run a business, to keep people coming in the door. And I think, you know, in these diners, the only way they're still staying in business is because of the people that live on Main Street. It's because of the people that are in small town, because people that don't know about it aren't going to come all the way there. And that's why it's so important to put things on the menu, to maybe give them a little spotlight so that people can hear about it and maybe want to try it out, because that's the only way they're going to survive, if they get new customers.
Exactly. Like Extreme Makeover, did you find yourself reacting emotionally to some of the sad stories from faltering diners?
You know, I was hoping I wouldn't. but to be honest, like, I was blown away at how much these diners mean to people. And I was also blown away at, especially, like, guys that are that don't show emotion, that care so much about their diner, and then realizing how much the town cares about them.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't expect to see the kind of emotion that I saw in this. And then you realize that in many ways, a family-run business is equal, even more sometimes, more important to them than a home, because this is part of their life that they've been part of when they were a kid, that they've raised their family in, and now they've passed it on to the next generation. And so what happens to it and its future is their life. So us getting it right is absolutely paramount, because we're not dealing with just a house that you can sell and move to another one. This is like a legacy. This is important. This is pride. It's everything. It's the reason people get up at 5 in the morning to be there for so many other people. So, I was blown away at how much I witnessed emotionally and physically about how much people really care about a diner in a small town.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you are right. Diner people are very passionate people. Now, have you met Randy Garbin yet?
Not yet. I will.
I am sure that you will, because Randy Garbin is like a diner aficionado, and he's known, you know, all throughout, you know, the country. And I'm sure he's going to pop up at some point, because we actually had some conversation about this show, and he's quite excited about it. So I'm sure that you'll have some conversation with him.
Awesome. That's good to hear. I mean, it's been a lot of fun, I have to admit, and not only that, but I love sort of shining a light on things that are so American that you forgot. You know what I mean? Like, you can't find a diner in another country. You can't find, like, that is anything like what you find on a little main street in a small town in America. There's just nothing quite like it. And it's, you know, it may be a flashback to Mayberry, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what, you know, harkens back to the good old times of American culture and people sort of recognizing each other on the street. And, you know, it's like where everybody knows your name type of deal. And I think everybody wants to sort of belong in a diner. And I think a lot of times as we sprawl out and we all get bigger and we're all sort of like, you know, ordering online, it's not the same as when you walk in the door of a diner. All that melts away and you feel part of a larger family. And so to be involved in a show where you get to feel that on a constant basis is kind of awesome for me. So I'm stoked.
Final question, and I want to bring it back to family, because that's really where we've been talking a lot today, especially with Carol having a family business here that's been very successful. I wondered initially what your food connection was, and then I found out that you learned to cook pretty young as the son of a single mom.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when they have to work and go to school at night. You have to learn pretty quickly to to cook and fend for yourself. But for me, I think one of the I mean, I've always been self-sufficient to be able to, like, you know, cook with whatever we have in the cabinet. But I ended up living, I was doing construction and working for this Italian guy named Carlo Bagazzi. And so he got tired of picking me up every day to go to work. So he made me move in with his family for like 6 months. And living with an Italian family, I think everybody should do it, because you will learn more about cooking in that short of time. I mean, look, it doesn't have to be Italian. It can be Greek. It can be whatever. But you're going to learn more about cooking than you ever did in your entire life. And so, yeah, my mom is many things, but she was always about education and about, you know, working, you know, two jobs to make sure she could support us. So she wasn't always in the kitchen, you know what I mean? But I learned it's amazing what you can learn from. In fact, I've got a couple ideas about, you know, about learning more. So, but look, this show, I'm already learning. Just working with Amanda, I learn something new every day. So it's awesome.
To run American Diner Revival with Chef Amanda Freitag, who you just mentioned, debuts tonight, 10:30 on the Food Network. And I think it has 6 episodes already done. A couple from my home state of Michigan. I'm looking forward to seeing the show and hope you'll watch it as well. Ty Pennington, of course, from Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And now, the American Diner Revival exclusive New Hampshire interview on the radio with Carol and Mike here on Food for Thought. We're at 8:28. Where did I get that? We're at 1:28 in the afternoon. Show today being co-hosted by our fill-in host, Chad Zangalis from Amherst Country Club. Good God. I think I need a cocktail. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to throw a question at you. You know, people typically hide money in the craziest places. For those that have money, I don't put myself in that category, so I've never had to hide it.
Yep.
So where did the late Joan Rivers used to hide her money is the question.
Ooh.
And there's a food connection here, and we'll tell you what it is when we come back on Food for Thought, WTPL The Pulse, 107.7, coming right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Ooh, I like that funky music, baby. Play that funky music, white boy. It is 1:32, Food for Thought. You can tell we're just kind of a little goofy. It's Friday, heading into a 3-day weekend. So everybody, I hope, is in a good mood. The weather, fantastic. We're broadcasting, as we do every day, at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street in downtown Manchester. Carol Lawrence, a Red Arrow owner and co-host of the show and founder of it, is away for a few days. So she said, go ahead and, you know, pick whoever you want to co-host. So I selected Chad Zangalis for today. Amherst Country Club and Panema Green Family Golf Center. He is the director of operations, and this is such perfect golf weather. I'm sure that the courses are being heavily used today.
Yeah, people are anxious to be outside, not doing yard work, but doing something recreational and fun.
Did it, with the horrible winter, did it really have any serious effect other than maybe setting back the timetable of getting the course in shape?
Fortunately, it thawed out nicely. It really was a nice thaw for us, and the superintendent, Steve Wilson, is doing an awesome job of getting the course irrigations back up and running, and everything's starting to green up, and they're doing a really, really nice job with that.
I know that the flooding with the Sohegan River can be a problem at times. I'm going to guess that wasn't an issue this year.
It wasn't, and that was part of the thawing process that we were very pleased with, because, you know, it wasn't a lot of rain in the spring, and you know, that snow just kind of gradually went away, which was good.
It, you're right. It was perfect, because we were envisioning after, 100 inches of snow or whatever this year, that if we got any kind of heavy downfall or downpour or rain, it would really mess up everything.
That's right.
That didn't happen. In fact, I'm hearing that this is the driest May in weather recording history at only 4/100ths of an inch so far.
You know, it's
which isn't good for what you do.
That's right. New England weather. You know, we were complaining about too much snow, and now we're going to, a month later, we'll have a drought.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
But it's the nature of the beast, I guess. So.
Yeah. So how many heads are in the irrigation system at your golf course?
That's a great question. And when I leave here, I'm going to find out.
That's not going to do me any good now. The only reason I ask is I'm a president of a condo association where I live. There's only 18 units, so the footprint isn't that large. But I just found out the other day, because we had to kind of get the irrigation started again, 103 heads over just a few acres. So I can imagine it must be well into the hundreds for you. Although you have industrial ones that probably have a bigger spray pattern.
We do, yeah. You know, we just renovated the mini golf, and when we renovated it, we put in all new irrigation. And I would say there's probably 100 heads just on that course.
Mm-hmm.
So On the golf courses, I can only imagine, but I'm going to find out. It's a good trivia question.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you've got that many heads, you've probably got three a week breaking, right, that need to be
fixed. That's right. Yeah, especially when we first fire it up. You know, Steve fires it up in the spring. It's it's a project for him and his crew to make sure that they're all spinning and going in the right direction, covering all the areas that need to be covered. So,
yeah,
those guys are – those guys work tirelessly for sure.
Then I'm thinking in the fall when you have to blow it out. I mean, how long must that take? When typical person, they bring the air compressor over, it takes 10 minutes and they're gone. I could imagine what a golf course must require.
Yeah, we actually contract with a company that brings a special air compressor. Giant actually comes on a trailer to blow out the lines. And it's loud. It's a loud process and it's usually happening all over the course. So it's it is interesting because we'll get phone calls from the course from people who think something is definitely wrong. You know?
And, of course, your facilities are an Audubon-certified golf courses, which means that you have certain qualifications you have to meet, that you're extra careful about the habitat and stuff. That must not make the birds happy when those things start blowing up around them.
You know, we try to appease the birds by giving them places to live and making sure we're not disrupting their habitat already. So, yeah, but the I think the golfers are more disturbed by it, Mike, quite frankly. I mean, the sound, you know.
We have a few moments where we can just talk amongst ourselves because the guests are all done for the day. Carol will be back on Tuesday. We'll be off Monday because it is a holiday, and Wednesday next week will be off preempted by the Boston Red Sox. So we have a little time, and I've been holding this for a few weeks because I thought it would be fun to talk about sometime. We know that Joan Rivers sadly passed away not that long ago. During surgery, and as time goes on, you start to hear more about celebrities. And I don't know if this came by way of her daughter, Melissa, but Joan Rivers had an interesting place to hide her money when she was out and about, maybe in her purse or whatever. Do you know what she used? Because who knows how much Joan Rivers would carry, you know,
right.
Maybe $1,000 or a couple hundred or whatever, but probably enough to take care of what she needed.
I'm gonna take a stab at this, and I'm gonna say she hid it in her cake.
Well,
you know that's like it's like a double entendre. Is that what you call it? You know, the cake is in the cake.
Yeah.
That's my guess. I know it's a food item.
It is a food item, and it is not cake because that would be awfully messy to carry around in a clutch purse if you're going out to walk the red carpet. Oh my God, is that? That's cake leaking out of Joan Rivers' purse.
Here, let me get 100 out of this Twinkie here. <I'll> just...
She actually hid her money in milk dud boxes.
Interesting.
So imagine, you know, somebody finds the person, they go through it, they just toss the milk dud box. Who would ever think of looking in there?
Right, looking in there.
So there is a number of other places. I found a website, and I don't know where or why, but it's places where people hide their cash, their money. And now there's the predictable ones, feminine products boxes, toilet paper roll, fake drain in the garage. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Dirty clothes hamper. Right. What thief is going to go pawing through your, dirty underwear?
Slow down, Mike. I'm writing some of these down.
In a vase with fake flowers.
Okay.
Here's one. Inside a picture frame, tuck the bills between the cardboard layer and the chipboard backing. Now, that's great, but think about it. If you forget the money's there, it always happens when somebody dies. They donate their books to a local library.
Right.
Somebody buys the books, and they find five $100 bills neatly inside the pages. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
People store their money and forget they did that.
Now, do you think Joan Rivers, is she taking the milk duds out of the box?
I would think so.
A hot summer day, just chocolate and milk duds covered?
Exactly.
You
got a Benjamin that's got chocolate all over. That would just... No, I think she probably hired somebody to do that, Chad, but certainly a question worth investigating. In a vacuum. Now, somebody says, quote, I hide my money in the vacuum. I just unzip the cover that holds the replaceable bags and stash wherever it is I want hidden, or whatever it is I want hidden. I have been given, as a present, a new vacuum, but refuse to get rid of the old one. Nobody understands why I won't part with it. I just say I still use it when I need it. I want to tip her hand. Inside an old pair of sneakers is another one on this particular website.
Okay.
Here's a good one. Hiding money in a tank with mean fish.
That is a good one.
Acquire a nice aquarium filled with piranhas and put your stash under the gravel.
Boy, these seem like a lot of work to me. I just hide my money where no one's going to look, which is in my wallet. There's never any money in there, quite frankly. You know?
Me too. I find myself walking around with less money now than ever, just because you got credit cards and everything else. An old winter coat. My ex-boyfriend had a bad habit of going through my purses looking for money to buy beer. I started hiding money inside my winter coat. I cut a very small hole in the armpit area of the inner layer and stuffed the bills into the coat, no coins. I managed to put away almost $20 in a few months.
Wow, that's a good savings program
kidding. Here's a good one. A fake pipe in the ceiling in the basement. Just get a piece of PVC that goes nowhere, kind of have it tucked under the insulation maybe. And
that is a good one.
That's a great one. I mean, what thief, when they're in and out of a house in usually 2 minutes or less,
right,
they're not going to be pawing around the insulation downstairs.
Right.
Here's one. Under the cat's litter box. Under the litter box, well, one of five. I figured that by time the thief gets close, he or she will succumb to the aroma before they get what I have, what little I have.
These people are giving some serious thought to this. Do you have a lot of listeners that are bank robbers? I mean, what is this cash that we got to hide all of a sudden?
We're going to find out, aren't
Next
we?
Week, how to launder your cash, people.
Here's one. In an old wood stove, I hide things in the wood stove that hasn't been used in years. I use a plastic container and seal it to keep it clean. As an added bonus, if the house burns down, the wood stove contents may survive.
I don't know. Can't we just get a fireproof, lockable safe at this point? I mean, it's a lot of work.
It is. Only a couple more. In curtain rods, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
Because they're hollow in the middle, kind of circular. You can roll them up, put your Benjamins in there. And here's one, the bottom of a paper shredder bin. I hide my money at the bottom of the bin that collects my paper shreddings. Who the hell would look through confetti for money? I also have a .40 caliber, so nobody get any ideas.
Oh, that is good. Wow.
So, all that inspired by Joan Rivers, rest her soul, who used to put her money, as part of her wallet contents, in milk dud boxes.
I have a friend of mine named Justin who actually hides his money on his roof under his shingles.
No way.
Yeah, he's one of those types. But, you know, every spring you see him out there on his ladder and he's up and down the ladder. I don't know.
You are kidding, right?
But no, I wish I was. I just, you know, put the money in the bank, Justin. It's okay. It'll be safe there.
So he must put it like in plastic or something because that's exposed to the elements to some degree.
Yeah, he does some sort of system. And of course, he doesn't tell me which shingles, but I know that he's doing that. Poor guy. That's a serious problem.
Well, and I think a lot of the hiding money is not so much from, you know, somebody that might break into the house. The odds of that are very small. But to hide it from your partner. I mean, there are a lot of people that have accounts their spouse doesn't know about.
Right. Yeah, it's like your play money, basically, right? Like
yeah,
your fun
essentially.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it's how convenient is it, though, for you to have to get up on a ladder to go get your play money? I mean, you know, isn't that giving away some clues?
Yeah.
You know,
honey, what's wrong with the roof? You keep repairing the same spot. Shouldn't we call somebody?
Yeah. Yeah, I would think his wife is going to start catching on to this. But I'm
thinking now that you have this new grill cleaning business that sometime you're going to open up a grill. And you're going to find an envelope that somebody, like in December, put in there that's loaded with a couple $1,000s.
That's right. Yeah. And hopefully it's not ashes. You know, it's actual cash. That would be my concern is I end up lighting the cash on fire or, you know, I would be extremely concerned about that.
There's another job I just did for free. Chad Zingales is my co-host here for the next few moments here on The Pulse. WTPL. Carol Lawrence is away back on Tuesday. We'll be back with parting comments and more fun stuff to talk about. For instance, our next segment, definitely food-related, foods that were created by mistake. Ooh. We'll have some fun with that next on The Pulse.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hello into the final moments of, this is almost the end of May. Next week is officially. It's Memorial Day Monday. Enjoy. Be safe. Week from today, we're at the State House, and we'll be doing a live broadcast right there from the lawn under the Golden Dome in Concord, and hope that you'll come by and watch the fun. Carol will be back by then. Our show is brought to you by Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford and Londonderry, IntegrityFit.com. And we're also brought to you by Grasshopper's Garden Center, where the customer comes first, 728 New River Road in New Boston. Food for thought. And, of course, foodforthoughtnh.com on the website and Food for Thought the Facebook page if you would like to keep up with what's going on with that. We have somebody who does a really nice job basically letting you know who the guests are going to be from day to day. So take a look at that. Keep up with Food for Thought. As I said, Carol Lawrence, my partner, back on Monday. Shad Zingales yesterday or today. And Carrie Layman yesterday. Fabulous jobs as co-hosts. I can't thank both of them enough. Now, with our remaining 5 or 6 minutes, we have a couple things that are food-related. Foods created by mistake, Chad, and this is probably something you've never really given a whole lot of thought to. The sandwich was not a deliberate something. It kind of evolved. John Montagu, the fourth Earl of Sandwich in the 18th century, was immersed in a heated game of cards when lunchtime appeared to roll around. John, lost to the competitive, merciless animal within him, didn't want to be bothered with eating with a fork and knife, so he requested that he be brought a piece of meat between two pieces of bread. And as legend goes, that's how the Earl of Sandwich created the sandwich. I had no idea. Cheese puffs.
Cheese puffs.
Love cheese puffs. They're absolutely one of the worst things for you. In fact, it's what they call an extruded snack.
What does that mean?
Pretty impressive. It means that it's pushed out of something.
Oh.
Extruded, right.
Gotcha.
Which means if somebody's pushing something out of something other than a cow, it's probably not good for you. Cheese puffs. The Flakehall Company of Wisconsin was known in the 1930s for crushing grains for animal food. Earl Wilson, an employee at the company, noted that they would use moistened corn kernels to keep the machine from getting too clogged up. Due to the heat of the machine, the moistened cornmeal would bake off into little puffy ribbons that hardened when the cool air hit them. Edward thought that these puffed corn kernels looked good, like a great snack food, so he took them home and added some oil and seasonings and thus created the cheese puff.
Yes, well done.
Yes, another accidental food discovery. Potato chips, one of my absolute favorite foods on the planet.
Yep.
Potato chips, ironically enough, the potato chip was invented by a chef named George Crumb after a customer sent back an order of fried potatoes that was allegedly, quote, not thin enough. George became spiteful and cut the potatoes as thin as he could, resulting in the potato chip that we know and eat too many of today.
Wow.
So there you go. He said, this works.
And you know, and it came off of somebody complaining about something.
Yeah,
too, which
exactly.
Is great.
So turn that lemon into lemonade,
right,
which is what, and have it with your chips. It pairs nicely. How about popsicles? How were popsicles invented accidentally? Well, in 1905, 11-year-old Frank Epperson left a soda out on the porch with a stick resting in it. Overnight, the soda had frozen with the stick standing straight up. Years later, Frank applied for a patent for his invented treat, originally called an Epsicle, because his name was Epperson. You know, Epsicle just doesn't really...
It doesn't. No.
It doesn't move the product off the shelves.
Yeah.
So the Epsicle became the popsicle. And finally, ice cream cones. It was not widely known that the invention of the ice cream cone was actually adorable. At the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904, an ice cream salesman ran out of bowls. So Ernest Homwy, who was running a Syrian-inspired booth next to him, decided to roll up some of his pastries called the Zalabia to help out his neighbor. So you can kind of see it rolled up with a little pointy at the bottom.
Yep.
Put the ice cream in there, and thus the ice cream cone was born.
Brilliant. Early 1900s, a lot of these inventions came.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
Really good.
Exactly. And the chocolate chip cookie, widely believed to have, the Toll House cookie, invented somewhere out in Western Mass, was another mistake, if I recall the cookie lore correctly, is essentially they wanted to put some chocolate in the cookie, but they were like big chunks of probably baking bars or whatever. So they just smashed them up and kind of made them into small pieces and found out that was the
chocolate chip.
That was the chocolate chip. And that was, I think, back in the 1930s.
Wow.
So it's a relatively new food.
You know, I was just, I saw a brochure recently that Trader Joe's is now selling half-popped popcorn kernels. You know how when you get to the bottom of the bottom of the bowl, you can't chew the ones that are totally unpopped because they're too hard. But the ones that are half-popped are delicious.
Yeah, they are.
They sell them by the bag now.
They're not good for your teeth, but they are very, very tasty.
Very tasty.
And it's funny you had mentioned that because I make popcorn at home using just a paper bag.
Yes.
And
my wife does that as well.
Yes. So there's no oil.
Right.
And you just layer the bottom of the bag with just so it pretty much covers the bottom, and you put it in the microwave, depending on how strong your microwave is. For me, it's about 2 minutes.
Yep.
You just curl the bag up at the top, a couple curls, and you hit it for 2 minutes, and you take it out, put it in the bowl and add whatever you want to it. The problem is that frequently you do get those half popped or not at all popped ones.
Yeah.
So use those again. When we get done and there's a bunch of them on the bottom, I put them back in the bag.
Yep.
And because they've already taken quite a few hits of radiation, what happens is the next batch tastes just a little like a little more cooked or a little, if you like stuff burned, it doesn't taste burned.
Right.
But it's got a little different flavor profile than the original batch. So you really get two batches that taste very different.
Sounds good.
Out of the same bag. But I don't advise using the bag more than twice because I think it could become a fire hazard.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to try this, but I hide all my cash in my popcorn kernel bag, so you
won't be doing that from now on, will you?
That sounds delicious, though. Cooking it right out of the bag, it's
one of the things I dislike the most in the world of convenience foods is microwave popcorn that you buy off the store shelves. First of all, I almost gag when I walk down the aisle because you can always smell the chemicals and the faux butter that they use in there. Yeah, I know. You like it, don't you?
Yeah.
I know. You're sitting there at the golf course, and you're hungry, but you can't leave the desk.
Yeah.
You pop up some microwave popcorn.
My brother used to tell me that in order to boost profits and sales at the movie theaters, they would actually paint the floor with a sticky, buttery-scented material.
Is that right?
Yeah, but that's not true. They don't do that.
Oh, okay. So we'll leave you with that little bit of misinformation. Compliments of Chad Zangali is my guest host today. Thanking him from Panema Green Family Golf Center and Amherst Country Club. He's director of operations and a very funny man. And now has a brand new business called Just Like New BBQ.
Yes.
He cleans grills, which nobody else is doing that we know of. So
that's right.
It's food related, so we thought let's give it a shot.
Well, thanks for having me.
Chad, thank you, my friend. Have a great holiday weekend. You'll be working a lot of hours at the golf courses,
yes,
I'm sure.
And you as well.
Thank you. Carol's back on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Food for thought, WTPL. Enjoy the holiday, be respectful, and have fun. Bye-bye.